after April's through, we'll decide what we do with the balance of the agenda, so.
All right.
Oh, please, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Agenda paper 7. This paper provides an update on the ISB's decision at its November meeting not to proceed with our proposals on disclosure requirements about an assessment of going concern. If you remember, you received a submission in 2012 about the disclosures that were required by IAS 1 presentation of financial statements about an assessment of going concern. You discussed this in November 2012, and in January 2013, you recommended a narrow focus amendment to the ISB that would address when disclosures should be made about going concern and what those disclosures should be. The ISB discussed this recommendation in March and asked the staff to further develop these proposals with the help of board advisors. In November, the ISB discussed these proposals and decided not to continue with this amendment. This was a lively discussion with the board members, split 8-8 for and against continuing with the projects, and the reasons given for not continuing with the project are in paragraph 15 of this paper. Some members think that the proposed amendment would result in boilerplate disclosures about a range of risks. Other members thought that this is a topic that's better handled through local regulatory or audit guidance. Some were concerned about these disclosures would make the entity more at risk from not being a going concern, the so-called self-fulfilling prophecy. And a number of members also questioned whether there's a need for the proposed amendment. So that was the basis of the board's decision, and update is included at paragraph 16 to that effect. Do you have any questions on the ISB's discussions about going concerns?
Before we do that, would either of the two board observers like to expand on April's description?
I think April gave a fairly accurate description of the discussion at the board table and the various views expressed by the board members.
If this was one of the hottest debate among members, so they are very serious in dealing with this issue. So I'm very surprised at their discussion, the depth of discussion and some pros and cons of this issue. So that's what I would like to add to April's.
Scott?
One of the original things that drove this problem that some were conflating the threshold for disclosure and the threshold for going off the going concern assumption in preparation of the accounts. And part of the purpose of the amendment was to make that separation clear, that there is, even under current literature, forgetting about providing more clarification, but we were trying to say that there are times under the requirements that you are required to make disclosures, even though it is still appropriate to use the going concern assumption in preparation of the accounts. And by not doing anything, aren't we losing that as well?
When we did outreach, there were one or two jurisdictions who did not make a distinction. They did think that if they decided the going concern basis of preparation was appropriate, that there was no need to make disclosures. They were in the minority, and the general view was that they didn't see how anyone reading IS-1 would have come to that conclusion.
I see. Okay. So part of the board members' conclusion was based on the fact that there are different thresholds for disclosure and changing the accounting should already be evident from the current language.
And I think it was generally agreed that it is a very high threshold for not preparing financial statements on a going concern basis.
Absolutely,
but it
yes.
is a much, much lower threshold for disclosure.
Okay, and so the board members believed that that was clear from the current literature, and therefore the main purpose in their minds of the amendments was to provide more guidance around when disclosures should be made and what kinds of disclosures.
Well, I'm not sure that the board actually distinguish different objectives of this project. I think the real conclusion of the discussion was that the board didn't really think that there was a need for the project. They felt that there hadn't been sufficient demonstration that there were enough people who were misreporting or failing to make disclosures about going concern. And I think they were very concerned that this is a very sensitive subject and that commercially it could damage some entities. But over the sort of the course of the discussions in March and in November, I think the boards were aware of all the different factors, and I think at the end of the day, they were really, A, concerned whether or not there was a real need for them to do something, and also B, whether it's really a standard-setting issue. Some people think that IS1 is clear and that it's more of a regulatory or an auditing issue than a standard-setting issue as such.
Yeah, I was a bit concerned about the words in the November 2013 update about IASB members being concerned that making the disclosures might hurt companies who had to make that. I mean, I don't think that is an appropriate basis on which to decide whether to make the disclosures. And having that in the minutes, suggesting that some board members think that is a relevant consideration, is, I'm afraid, going to encourage preparers to say, well, I know that I'm supposed to make this disclosure, but gee, it would hurt me if I did.
Scott, I don't think that's how I would characterize the concerns that were raised. I think what they were expressing concern about was changing the requirements, because we were proposing, as part of this package of proposals, to change when you would have to start giving these proposals, these disclosures.
Sure. I understand.
And that would be, you know, looking at the, do you have these particular events or conditions, rather than on a sort of a net, what we called a net assessment.
Well,
so I'm not sure that they would say, you know, there was a defense for saying you don't need to give an existing required disclosure because you think it would hurt the company. It was, we don't think we should change the required disclosures from what they currently are.
But if the new disclosures would be useful to users of financial statements, then the fact that they might hurt the company making the disclosures, I don't see that as a concern. Our customers are users, and I just found the language sitting out there in public in the update to be somewhat concerning. In that, if you're taking it into account and deciding what standards to set, I don't want to set that standard because it might cause a disclosure that would harm the company making the disclosure. That concerns me. Had the wording been that board members were concerned that the new disclosures might cause companies to make disclosures even though they're not actually in serious trouble, okay, well, that makes sense to me. But it was kind of the, you know, the wording suggested that, you know, we don't want to make companies make disclosures that might cause the market to respond badly.
I think your concern has more to do, my understanding, with imprecision in the update.
Yes. I don't know what was actually behind that.
I listened concerns. To the board discussion, and I didn't walk away from it with that.
Good.
Sense. So I think we take it as a criticism of imprecision on our part in drafting the update. Laurence?
I'm really disappointed by the board decision because I believe that ISB is not up to its mandate here. IS1 does not include robust enough disclosure requirements ongoing concern, and we know that in many cases those disclosures are being made possibly too late, not detailed enough, and there is not enough support in the standard itself to implement it. And so when the board members tell you that they don't see a need to revise the standard, how come the auditors will revise their auditing standards so that they will have to disclose those elements that the ISB doesn't want companies to disclose. And so we're getting to a position where we, auditors, will disclose those elements that the companies itself is not required to disclose. I think that ISB should be troubled very much, because if auditors are doing so, we're doing so because we are responding to regulators' criticisms about information ongoing concern. We are responding to criticisms that there are not enough information in financial statements when companies are in difficulties and so on. And this has been exacerbated with the crisis. And with the IESB saying, oh, nothing to do, nothing, our disclosure requirements are perfect, I think this is completely showing that they have not understood what is going on.
To be fair, we did ask regulators if they could provide us with examples of situations where inadequate disclosure had been made. And there were very few examples provided to us on an IFRS basis. There were a number of examples from the US GAAP, obviously, where there aren't these requirements for disclosure. But we didn't get much evidence to present to the ISB on this. And I mean, the staff obviously were disappointed that we didn't proceed with this, because we have put a lot of work into this. But it really was quite clear, I think, in the discussions that the board as a whole didn't have an appetite to take this project on.
Wash their hands.
I think that's extreme. John?
I suppose before I make some comments, I've got a question. I mean, April, you've provided us with an update of the discussions. I mean, what's the process here? Is this coming back to the Interpretations Committee because we referred it to the board, or you're just providing...
This is just a matter of professional courtesy, really, to let you know what happened to all your good work.
Because the submission... the submission came to us, didn't it, for seeking clarification of IAS-1. I mean, not seeking additional disclosures, but clarification of the requirements of IAS-1. So is it not something we have to take back and look at further, or we just say the board has dropped it and therefore it's...
No, the wording of the submission that we were going to clarify the questions of when these disclosures would be required and what would be required, that was agreed with the submitter. Yeah. And so the submitter expected a discussion of just the proposals that went to the board.
I mean, I would echo Laurence's comments. I mean, I think it's quite clear going concern information is important to users, and there's evidence that there's insufficient information about the uncertainties around going concern in financial statements. And it seems to me it's not just an issue for auditors and regulators. If what appears or should appear in financial statements ought to be an issue for the standard setters to set guidance for those disclosures. And I think it's actually quite disappointing. The requirements are already in IAS-1, and I think clarification or amendments to clarify those would actually be useful and helpful, not just to users, but to everybody in the financial reporting community. So I think it's actually quite a disappointing outcome.
Reinhardt?
Just thinking, following along the comments that John made, I think one area in particular where it would be helpful to have some explicit illustrative guidance is where management has made a judgment about whether a material uncertainty exists about the ability of the company to continue to go in concern, but on balance, looking at all the factors and the extent to which those factors are within the company's control, achievable, et cetera, concludes that the entity, nonetheless, those material uncertainties have been overcome. That's a significant judgment that quite likely, given the way the auditing directions are going, will be highlighted in the auditor's report. I think it would be helpful to have that clarified in IS-1, that's an example of IS-1 paragraph 122, where it talks about disclosure significant judgments, that would be possibly an appropriate place to discuss that. So it's those areas where there's a close call, where on balance, you know, conclude no material uncertainty, but there were positive and negative factors, and it was a significant judgment that management made As I say, that likely will be highlighted by the auditors. It would be really good to have that, some discussion, what the disclosure context should be in the financial statements.
Tony?
I'm in much the same place as Brian. I think I'm actually not sure there is so much of a problem with the disclosures that are made when management concludes there is a material uncertainty. And I think we're typically pretty good at figuring out when there's a material uncertainty. I think the gap in the disclosures is, as Reinhardt says, management's thought about it, on balance, made a judgment that no more there's no material uncertainty, and then it's silence. And the feedback we get is what is perhaps damaging to the company is suddenly it becomes a material uncertainty, and there's a disclosure, and there's been no signposts at all. Because the judgments that have been made over the years that there's no material uncertainty haven't been described anywhere. And so my sense is that there ought to be more disclosure around this issue generally, but particularly when there's a close call about whether or not there is a material uncertainty, and on balance, management concludes there is not. And I think that is the area that I would have much preferred the board to address and think about whether amending IAS 1 around judgments, adding something to suggest that this might be a significant judgment that ought to be disclosed, would have been the way forward.
And that notion was discussed in some detail, particularly with the board advisors when we were developing the proposals. And as a result of that, the conclusion was that you had to use the gross existence of these problems as being the trigger for disclosure, because otherwise you didn't provide all the information about what judgments were being made. And so the whole basis of the proposal was that you disclose once these problems existed and allow people themselves to assess what the effect of the mitigating factors were and what judgment had been applied. But, you know, as we say, that discussion didn't fly with the board.
Andrew?
I really share the concerns and disappointments of others who've spoken in this area, an expectation gap in this area, and there might be a gap between the auditor's responsibilities and management's responsibilities. So I appreciate the professional courtesy of reporting back on the board's discussion, but if at all possible, so we could report back the concerns of this committee back to the board.
I'll get to that in a minute. Marie, last comment.
I think maybe we do not give enough examples as possible. We struggle to find many. And we share this concern that this gap between what will be in the auditor report might be in the auditor report with nothing in the financial statement. So I do agree it's a concern.
Well, again, it's not, there's nothing. There's nothing new. I understand all of your frustrations. Somebody, I think John asked, what's the next due process step? The next due process step is that we give the board, Michael gives the board, since I no longer live in London, our usual update.
Indeed.
On the course of these conversations. He will carry forward the fact that there weren't nobody very happy. And if that creates a groundswell at the board, there's always hope for a new tomorrow. I do not attach a high probability to that outcome. As I recall the discussion, the no's went in pretty strong and pulled some people to them. And the yeses were not nearly as passionate in their views. Pat doesn't agree with that assessment. Yeah. So yes, we will report back to the board. Michael will tell them that the committee was disappointed. But I, as I say, I don't attach a high probability to changing the outcome. Okay.
This is Wayne. This is Sandy. I didn't get a chance to weigh in on that topic, and I guess I'm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I kind of figured where you'd come from, but go ahead, please.
Well, I guess I mean, I would echo everything that was said. said, you know, what Laurent said and Scott said about, you know, you can't tell them, if you tell them not to disclose the risk because the risk is a real risk, then it's sort of circular. But I really feel strongly that, you know, not having management be responsible for this and putting the onus on the auditor to basically bring up the topic is a big problem. And having the auditor have a higher responsibility to the management is really troubling to us. And it's just not a dynamic, given the pay model, of how this is actually useful for investors. And I think that if we never do anything, it will always be a scarlet letter. To put these disclosures in, you know, that will always be perceived as being a self-fulfilling prophecy. I was disappointed, and I was glad that April touched on the point about, you know, this is an anecdotal, these are comments are anecdotal, but was there any empirical evidence of a lack of disclosures? I was disappointed to hear that, because I think there is research that shows, academic research, and I know it, at least under U.S. GAAP, that this is in fact the case, that, you know, it always comes too late. So anyway, I don't think I'm saying anything new other than the fact that I really feel like this puts the onus on the, you know, not management not doing something and putting the onus on the auditor is sort of the wrong approach. So you can register my dissent too, or dislike.
Okay, having forgotten, Luca, did you have anything to add?
No, nothing to add.
Okay. We were scheduled to wrap up at
25 past 6.
For a 6:30 dinner.
I know, it's cutting it fine.